Foil Companies and your neighborhood good golf dealer present We the People. This is Milo Bolton welcoming you to We the People for Golf. Tonight we salute the fighting men of the United States Marines. You'll meet the first Marine hero in World War II and the only Marine officer to escape from Bataan.
We fight our country's battles on the land and on the sea.
You'll hear the Marines actually demonstrate a beach landing from an amphibious tank, the same way they landed at the Solomon. You'll meet the man who commands the war correspondents of the Marines, General Robert L. Denig. And you'll hear what one of the Marines' newest recruits wants to do for his country, Marine Private Tyrone Power.
We are proud to face the fight of the United States Marines.
Yes, from Colorado, from North Carolina, from Washington, D.C., California, New York, the Marines stand ready to bring you the kind of experiences you hear only when We the People speak. There's no more fitting place to begin our We the People program tonight than with a story of the Marines on the very first day of World War II. At 9:30 on the evening of December 7th, the white sand beaches of Midway Island were bristling with guns and sandbagged emplacements. Behind them, Marines were waiting with itching fingers for the Japs they knew were coming. At one command post, a lieutenant with a small group of men had been waiting since morning when they heard that Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
Corporal, see anything yet?
No, sir. I just took another look through the glasses.
I can't see much either. The moonlight's bright here on the beach, but the horizon's pitch black.
I'll keep watching, sir. They might come any minute.
Well, we're ready for them.
There they are, sir. Must be a Jap ship firing now.
How many do you make out, Corporal?
Sounds like two ships, sir. One's a cruiser, I think. Can we open fire?
No, hold your fire. Wait till they're in range. 4,500 yards. Take the range, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. About 5,000 yards now, sir.
Okay, hold it. We'll surprise them.
4,800 yards, sir.
Communications okay, Corporal?
Yes, sir. Ready.
Range?
Coming in range, sir. 4,600 yards.
Right. Let them come.
4,500 yards, sir.
Give the order, Corporal. Commence firing.
Yes, sir. Commence firing!
Tonight, as we, the people's first Marine guest, is the young corporal who transmitted those orders over the communication system to the gun batteries. He's Corporal Harold R. Hazelwood of Stark City, Missouri. Corporal, what happened after you opened fire on the Japs?
Boy, we gave those Japs plenty to worry about. By the time we'd knocked a few dozen five-inch shells out their way, they were scrambling for cover like monkeys. I don't mean to say we didn't get our share of the fire, too. In fact, it was pretty tough there for a while. Our worst loss was our commanding officer, Lieutenant George Cannon. He was killed. But he didn't die until he'd gotten all the wounded men out to the dressing station. And by the time he got to the dressing station himself, it was too late.
Corporal Hazelwood, all America should know that you did your part just as gallantly as your commanding officer. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to hear the citation which was read to Corporal Hazelwood when he was awarded the Navy Cross for his heroism during the engagement at Midway.
For exceptionally meritorious service, extraordinary courage, and disregard of his own condition during a bombardment of Midway Island, Corporal Hazelwood, a switchboard operator, was wounded by shell fragments of a projectile that burst in the command post. Despite his wounded condition, he immediately set up his switchboard again and reestablished communications.
You must have been very proud to receive that honor, Corporal.
Yes, I got the Navy Cross all right, but there's lots behind the citation like that that sometimes you don't hear. When our command post was hit, the fellow got most of it was Lieutenant Cannon. He was as completely shot up as any man could be and live. But he stuck to his post and gave the commands that saved our lives. I got my share of shell fragments, which smashed my left leg. They knocked out the switchboard, too. And without that, Lieutenant Cannon couldn't get the commands to his guns. But when I saw what courage he had, It was easy enough for me to put that switchboard back into working order and help get his commands through. Believe me, Lieutenant Cannon was the first real Marine hero of this war, and he was decorated after his death with the Medal of Honor. I've never met his parents, but his mother's probably listening in now out in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Mrs. Cannon, I would like you to know that me and the other fellows in our outfit will never know a greater guy than your son. When my pals in the Marines ask me what it was like on Midway, I just tell them about him. You know, Mr. Bolton, we fellows at Midway used to pick up we the people from time to time up there.
Yes, Colonel Shannon told me that when he was on the program a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I know there's something all those fellows who are probably listening in want to know, especially my best buddies, Mutt and Willie. It's how the World Series are going. Fellas, the score today was Yanks 6, Cards 9. So long, pals, and God bless all of you.
For 67 years now, the United States Marines have known the hearty cry,
"Landing party away!"
Landing party away. That's the Marine command which has echoed from the shores of Tripoli to the Solomon Islands. And it's the cry which will start the campaign to reestablish Marines on Wake Island and open the coming Battle of Tokyo. Nowadays, Marines have a new wrinkle in invasion weapons, the amphibious tank. At this very moment, several of these unique 9-ton snub-nosed monsters are plowing through the Atlantic waves off North Carolina, approaching the shore in the same kind of landing that they made at the Solomon. We, the people, take you now to New River, North Carolina, where the next voice you hear will be Lieutenant George Schramm speaking from the command tank as it plows through the Atlantic to shore. Come in, Lieutenant.
Planes are coming. This is Lieutenant George Schramm. And as I speak to you, our amphibian tractor is in the center of a platoon of these fighting amphibian tanks loaded with Marines headed for the beach. It's dark here as we go churning along in the Atlantic, and I'm sitting in the three-man cab up in the darkened nose of this craft, which we call an alligator. I'm on the right. In the center is the sergeant operator, Howard O. Martin. He's steering us through the waves, and I hope you can hear them. The sergeant is watching the compass and keeping an eye on the shoreline way over there. The radio operator is on his left, on the other side of the cab. He's Corporal George DeLac, and he'll keep me in touch with the sergeants in the other tanks. Sergeant Martin, steer her a bit to port, and we'll head for that open stretch of the beach. That's okay. How's she handling, Sergeant Martin?
The waves are plenty tough tonight, Lieutenant. Wonder how the men are taking the spray back in the cargo section.
I'll find out. All secure back there, men?
Aye, aye, sir!
How would you like it if we were landing in Yokohama tonight, men?
We got bayonets to jingle, jangle, jingle, Lieutenant.
What's your name, Corporal?
Corporal Angelo Buccolino of Brooklyn. But I tell the people, Lieutenant, that these amphibious tanks were invented by Donald Rogley, grandson of the fellow who built Brooklyn Bridge. And then Donald comes along and builds a ship-to-shore bridge of war, this tank. I stayed up all night figuring this line and that Brooklyn pug. I think that's rather poetic or something.
Well, it's something. Ladies and gentlemen, these individual Marines crack wise now and then, but they're specialists in sudden death, and don't anyone ever forget it. They carry the new rising submachine gun, and those hit by their bullets will never rise again. In a few seconds now, we'll be on the beach in our preview of invasion. Then this alligator, now paddled through the water by its vertical duraluminum treads, will use them to bite into the ground like a tractor. It will wade up on the beach and rumble along on land, taking mud, swamps, 55-degree embankments, and small trees all in its stride. When they make one of these things fly, they'll be all-American, all-around, ambidextrous champions. And when they're made, the Marine Corps will have them first. As we crash onto land, those devil dog Marines back there will be off the leash, erupting from this steel alligator, melting into the scrub growth, wiping out machine gun nests, and spreading their own unique brand of desolation. And it's a game they know well. Corporal DeLac, have you heard from Lieutenant Charlie Mills on our starboard?
Yes, sir. He's right on the ball. His radio operator tells me his platoon is abreast of ours. Put the feet at the same time.
Right. The tank nose is just ahead of the waves, so as to ride in easily. And here we go now. Nurse her in, Sergeant. Man the machine gun. Those planes overhead are covering our operation. Wonder if you can hear them as clearly as we do. They give us real comfort, you know. Spreading that umbrella of safety over us. Okay, men, now let's wipe out that nest over there. Well, that's quick work, and we've taken enough land to serve as a bridgehead. For invasion is our business. This is just a sample of it. And we promise you solemnly that we're going to tear somebody's pagoda down. For right here in the mud and sand of North Carolina, we're paving the road to Tokyo. You've just had an advance hearing on the part the amphibian tractor will play in landing men and supplies and light field guns, a part they've already played in the invasion of the Solomon. And now, since the Marines have landed and have the situation well in hand, we return you to Milo Bolton and we the people in New York.
You know what that is, of course. It's the musical three dots and a dash, Morse code for V, and V stands for victory. Well, do you know that you can make that V work for victory? For instance, if you're driving your car at a tire-saving under 35 speed, and another driver races past you at tire-wasting speed, just sound the V on your horn as a friendly reminder to
drive slow, save tires.
And since you are driving slow nowadays to save tires and gasoline, here's another helpful suggestion that fits right in with your conservation program.
It's true that today's under 35 driving saves the tires, but it's not necessarily easier on your motor. In fact, you need to give your motor extra care to keep it running efficiently for a long time. And that's where Gulf's famous Alclor processed Gulf Pride motor oil can help. Gulf Pride has an amazing ability to resist oxidation and help maintain a better performing motor. Gulf Pride has extra resistance to the formation of hard carbon and engine varnish. And Gulf Pride forms an extra tough film of oil to give your motor's vital parts thorough protection. So remember,
drive slow, save tires.
And to help save your motor, stop at your neighborhood Good Gulf dealers and change to Gulf Pride, the world's finest motor oil.
Semper Fidelis, the motto of the Marines, always faithful. Wherever Marines go, they remember those words, and they're true blue. They not only are fighting for us, but they're making sure that we know all the details. Gulf's next guest is going to tell you about these battlefront reporters. He's Brigadier General Robert L. Denick, Public Relations Chief for the United States Marine Corps. You'll hear him interviewed for We the People by Austin Williams from Climax, Colorado, where General Denick has just awarded the Army Navy E to the Climax Molybdenum Company. We the People take you now to Climax, Colorado.
General Denick, people think of the Marines only as fighting men, not as reporters. Where do your Marine correspondents come into the picture?
Mr. Williams, there is only one kind of a Marine, and that's a fighting Marine. That goes for Marine combat correspondents, too. They've got to be handy with a typewriter, but handier still with a Tommy gun. They get their writing experience before they come to us. Then we give them regular basic combat training, and we don't show them any favors. If they can't learn to fight, they're no good to the Marines.
How does a Marine combat correspondent go about his job at the battlefront?
I can best answer that by revealing the first-person account obtained by combat correspondent Sergeant P. Wright of Arlington, Virginia, from Sergeant Barton F. Hill, whose home is in Mineola, Texas. He was a member of a rifle platoon which took part in the bitter fighting on Gavatu Island, where the Marines first struck at the Jap positions in the Solomons. This is the story as Sergeant Hill told it.
I was ordered to take a squad of men to clean out all enemy snipers along the beachhead on Gavatu. We moved along the fringe of the jungle and started knocking snipers out of trees left and right. Most of them, fortunately, were lousy shots. On the way up the beach, we killed about 40 Japs strapped in the trees. Funny thing, I got one Jap while he was looking directly down at me from a tree. He got his rifle tangled up in the branches and couldn't get it into position pointing directly downward. So I just took my time and with the greatest of pleasure, I shot him. We moved on up the beach and came to a cliff honeycombed with caves. Jap snipers had holed up in the caves and were keeping up a steady fire. As we approached, I saw a Navy Hospital Corps man shot in the shoulder. He fell into the water and his head went under, so I tore out and tried to hold his head above water. That's when they got me. Now, I'd like to tell you, Sergeant Wright, that the Corps men performed their duties in a manner which, in my opinion, was just about perfect. According to the doctor, I wouldn't be here today if the Corps men who brought me in had not known exactly what to do on the spot. It's a hell of a good feeling to know you've got that kind of backing in case you get wounded.
So the next time you read a Marine battle communique, remember, the Marine who wrote it first fought for you folks back here, and then in the dirt and grime and wreckage of the battlefield, did the extra job of writing it up so you might know what happened.
Where are your combat correspondents stationed, General?
Throughout the world, wherever there are United States Marines. They keep their battle stories coming in from every battlefront. One thing you can always count on. Whenever they're called on, the Marines will be in there fighting. And with them, fighting Marine correspondents. Telling the world about it.
Thank you for telling us, General Robert Denick. We return you now to We the People in New York.
It's all right to tell it to the Marines in a song, but you've got to be careful if you try it in person. But Gulf's next guest tells it to the Marines every week, a guest whose name is known the world over, wherever Marines are stationed. That name is D.L. Daly, editor of the Marine newspaper, the Quantico Sentry. Now, you Marines listening in from Trinidad to London, from Midway to the Solomons, we the people want you to meet your editor. And boys, get set for a surprise. Here's D.L. Daly in person. Say hello to those tough subscribers of yours, D.L.
Hello, Marines. This is D.L. Daly speaking. After 7 years of editing your copy, it's nice to be introduced.
Miss Daly, after hearing your voice and learning that you're the first time that you're a girl, I'll bet the Marines must wish they could have met you a long time ago. Tell us, what does the D.L. stand for?
The D stands for Daphne and the L for Lowell. I always wrote D.L. Daly because I wanted the Marines to think their editor was a man. I was afraid they'd think a girl couldn't edit their paper.
Well, the Marines aren't exactly a ladies' organization. How do you come to be running their paper?
Well, I bought it in 1936 from the Navy chaplain who started it. It was just a year old then, and he was ordered to sea duty. I surely was glad because I've always been crazy to own a newspaper.
Well, is that the only reason you bought the Sentry?
Well, as a matter of fact, you know most girls are crazy about the Marines, and I'm a girl.
Daphne, that's my brother, Captain Ralph E. Bolton. He's the officer in charge of the Marine Recruiting District of Indianapolis. He flew in from Indianapolis so he could be here with our guests on the program and in the audience.
How do you do, Captain Bolton?
The pleasure is mine, Miss Daly. Say, Milo, may I ask Miss Daly a few questions?
Oh, go ahead. This is a Marine program, and you're a Marine.
Well, Miss Daly, I've read the Quantico Sentry several times. How's it organized?
I'm the rewrite man, editor, publisher, copy boy, and makeup man. And the Marines provide the news, and plenty of it these days. For instance, I get the reports General Denning told you about. And I have my own reporter stationed at bases here in the U.S. I get lots of letters from other Marines everywhere, and their wives and mothers.
What are those letters like?
Well, I had one from a Marine who'd just gotten married and wanted me to recommend a cookbook for his wife. He said she'd made chicken soup the night before, and he was still spitting out the feathers. She boiled the chicken, feathers, and all.
And he got the cookbook?
You bet.
Say, Miss Daly, how is your circulation?
Oh, I get around. Oh,
I mean, I expect so. But, I mean, how's the circulation of the Sentry?
It's growing like mad. And what a job trying to keep addresses straight for several thousand Marines. One wrote me from China he'd like to subscribe. But by the time his paper got to China, he was in Iceland. And from there, it followed him to Australia. And just last week, I got a letter from him saying he'd finally received his first copy of the paper he'd ordered last June in Panama.
Being a Marine, I know your subscribers have a reputation for not staying put.
Yes, Captain, and that's why it means something when I say the yearly rate of the Sentry includes mailing expenses. Because I stand ready to send it anywhere in the world, from the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tulagi. And someday I'm going to send it to Berlin and Tokyo.
Yes, call out the Marines. They're the first to go, first to answer their country's call. Thousands of young men from Oregon, Texas, Idaho, from Vermont, Alabama, and Illinois. Yes, from all 48 have taken their place in the Marine Corps. School teachers, doctors, farmers, men from every walk of life have swelled the ranks. And among this group of enlisted men is a man you all know, for he's one of Hollywood's greatest stars, Tyrone Power, now a Marine. You'll hear him now speaking to you from a We the People microphone in Hollywood, where he'll be interviewed by Henry Childs. Take it away, Henry.
This is Henry Charles in Hollywood, and standing here beside me is Tyrone Power. Mr. Power, how does it feel to be a Marine now?
Well, it's a big thrill just to say I'm a Marine. You know, a lot of people have asked me why I joined up. Some were kind enough to say they thought I could do more good making pictures. Others said the income tax I paid the government was more valuable than my services in the Marine Corps. That kind of gave me a shudder. It reminded me of the stories I've read about the war between the states, when men who could afford it hired other men to fight in the army for them. I guess by now most of us realize that a bankroll alone won't win this war. You can't just sit around and peel off greenbacks while the other fellow does the work. So I decided it was about time I got in and did my part.
Well, Mr. Power, if you had your choice, just what would you like to do in the Marine Corps?
Well, if I had my choice, I'd like to be a glider pilot, because I've been flying a long time and I love it. And I'd like to become a glider pilot in the Marine Corps because I think that they're the boys that will start that big parade rolling to Berlin and Tokyo. In fact, they've already started it, and I want to be a part of that parade.
How did you ever come to take up flying, Mr. Power?
Well, Mr. Charles, I guess only men who fly themselves can really understand the thrill of flying. And even very few of them can express it. But a young RAF pilot by the name of John McGee had words for it. They're beautiful words, too, in a 14-line poem he wrote. McGee's parents live in Washington, D.C., where his father is the minister of St. John's Church. I know that Reverend McGee is listening in tonight to We the People with Mrs. McGee. I'd like to say to both of you that I believe your son John has written 14 lines of poetry that will never be forgotten. I'd like to read this poem now because it says what I feel about flying. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the wind-swept heights with easy grace, where never lark or even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God. John McGee, who wrote that poem, met his death as a flyer last year in England. He was only 19 years old, but he put into unforgettable words why flyers like to fly.
Thank you, Tyrone Power. I know all America wishes you the best of luck wherever the Marines send you. Now we return you to Milo Bolton and We the People in New York.
Now,
Gulf presents some helpful hints for car owners from our Motorist Almanac, John Reed King, editor. All right, John?
Well, friends, first we have a weather prediction for the month ahead. That's right. If you're enjoying balmy Indian summer weather now, don't let it fool you. There's plenty of cold, wintry weather coming along soon. The kind of weather that's mighty hard on your car. And now, our next prediction.
Hi there, Fred. Time for you to give my car another one of those swell Gulf Lex lubrication jobs.
Yes, lots of folks will drive into the neighborhood Good Golf dealers and ask for a Gulf Lex job. You see, Gulf Lex lubrication gives your car and body parts real protection no matter what the weather. The trained golf man uses lubricants that won't readily wash away in stormy weather or lose their lubricating properties when it's cold. The golf man follows special charts which specify the right lubricants needed to protect your car thoroughly. You get scientific lubrication at the cost of an ordinary grease job when you have your car Gulf Lexed. Have your golf man check your tires, too, to help prevent trouble. Remember,
your car is no use if your tires wear out. Your tires are no use if your car wears out. To help save both of them, stop at your Good Gulf dealers.
America. It's more than the United States, more than our mountains and plains. It's the spirit of men willing to die for the things America symbolizes. This is what America stands for. Come back with me to one dark night last January to Bataan. Word was suddenly flashed to Marine headquarters of Mara Valley. A strong Jap force was nearby. They outnumbered available Marines nearly 2-1. The Japs had machine guns and artillery. Our Marines, only rifles and revolvers. What was to be done? Our Marines gave their answer.
There's only one thing we can do. Attack.
Standing beside me as we, the people's next guest, is one of the officers who was with those fighting Marines. He's Colonel William T. Clements. Colonel Clements, what happened after that order to attack was issued?
A small battalion of Marines and Blue Jackets set out through the jungle to meet the enemy. The sailors were totally untrained for field combat. This force, led by Commander Francis Bridget, faced Jap machine gun fire all day and fought back with rifles and revolvers. Next morning, I arrived from Corregidor with Marine machine gunners. During the next 4 days, our men kept advancing. After each attack, we'd count our heavy losses and attack again. Later, Philippine scouts were sent in. And finally, every one of those Japs lay dead.
Colonel Clement, what was the biggest problem you men on Bataan had to face?
I would say the problem of supply and the lack of air support. The troops suffered from too little food. All cavalry horses were slaughtered. We ate everything in sight. That is, everything but General Pierce's horse. That was too tough. Nobody could eat it.
Well, Colonel Clement, can you tell us how you managed to escape from the Philippines?
I was ordered to board a submarine off the mainland. 3 times we set out from Corregidor. 3 times we were spotted by searchlights on Jap warships. Finally, we slipped by and managed to board the submarine. 3 weeks later, we reached Australia. I left on the night Bataan fell, and I was the only Marine to get away.
Well, Colonel, as you look back on the campaign, which of your men would you pick as Bataan's outstanding hero?
Everyone on Bataan was a hero. For example, I saw one of our officers attacked by 5 Japs. The officer shot 3 of those Japs. Someone else got the 4th. The last Jap lunged at the officer with his bayonet, but the officer rolled over, grappled with the Jap, and killed him with the butt of his empty pistol. That's the kind of fighting our soldiers and Filipino comrades were doing. Bataan fell only because her defenders had no more blood to give. Yes, the men who fought at Bataan, Corregidor, and Wake deserve all possible praise. But remember, those actions were military defeats. The only way to make up for those defeats is for every American to show the same fighting spirit those men did. The same kind that Corporal Hazelwood demonstrated at Midway. Corporal, will you step over here?
All right, sir.
Corporal Hazelwood, you are typical of the courage of America's fighting Marines. The President of the United States has recently honored you with the Navy Cross. Now the Commandant of the Marine Corps is honoring you further. He instructed me to tell you that tonight, on this program of We the People, you're being raised in rank. Corporal, in the future you will serve your country as sergeant. I congratulate you on winning this promotion on the field of battle.
Well, Sergeant, how do you feel now?
I don't know what to say, sir. Just thank you very much.
Sergeant Hazelwood, I'm sure that you will serve in your new rank with distinction. You are every inch a Marine.
Thank you, sir.
We, the people, speak. If you heat your home with fuel oil, then you should have Gulf's new free booklet, 30 Ways to Home Heating Economy. It tells you 30 ways to heat your home with less oil. To get this booklet that tells you how to conserve fuel oil, ask your nearest Gulf representative or write to Gulf in care of this station. Get your free copy of 30 Ways to Home Heating Economy right away. Music for We the People is under the direction of Oscar Bradley. This is John Lee King saying goodnight for the Gulf Oil Company and your neighborhood good golf dealer. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.